and welcome to Motopod, the internet radio show all about motorcycle road racing. This is episode number 470 for Wednesday, the 7th
October
2015. My name is Harry Lloyd, joining you from a very wet Barcelona, and I'm joined by Martin Darlington, who is sitting in what I'm guessing is a slightly drier Qatar.
Yes, it is. Hello, Harry. Hello, everybody. I'm sipping a glass of mixed berry fruit juice tonight. No Guinness. I'm flying tomorrow, so I'm being a good boy. But yes, it's very dry here. Although we've had a bit of fog in the mornings, it doesn't last long. Yeah. We've got that high humidity time of year. We had a lot of races this weekend.
Yes, we certainly did. There was obviously
may not have actually seen all of.
No, unfortunately, I was away at the CEV. Videos of that can be seen on YouTube by searching CEV Repsol. There's my shameless plug done. But yeah, I did manage to catch both British Superbike races. If you go to James Rispoli's Facebook page, he kindly provides a link to someone on YouTube who has uploaded all of the BSB races. So I'm not sure how legal that is, but you know, it's one of the BSB riders. So if you're an American listener who hasn't seen BSB and wants to see, I know there were some people on Twitter the other day tweeting about it, search for James Rispoli on Facebook. And then scroll down a bit and you can find one of his posts that has a link to that YouTube page.
I'm sure it'll be fine. It's not like Stuart Higgs is protective or, you know, an angry man or anything like that.
No, certainly. And if any YouTube police are listening, please let this one slide.
Yes. Right, we have a new subscriber.
Yes, we do. A big thank you to Richard Turner for subscribing to the show. As always, if you go to motopodcast.com, down the left-hand side of the page is all the donation and subscription info. A donation is a one-time sum of money, and the subscription is a recurring sum of money once every month for 12 months. And both of those things, no matter how big or how small, really do help keep the show trucking along. And all of those are greatly appreciated.
Incidentally, I've just noticed our news is... God, we put little notes to each other in, and it says updated as of the 21st of September, and of course, actually, it's the 7th of October. And then I realized that the title said Wednesday, the 7th of September. I'm not sure if you read it out or if you're clever enough to have worked out it's actually October.
I'm sure that the mythical Google Translate robot lady voice will have fixed that for us magically. So hopefully this bit explains.
We should get her to do all the intros. Yes, I remember the first time I had a sat-nav that would read out your texts, and I was picking up a mate. We were going off when I was still in the army. We were going off to a conference, and we'd drive along, and I sent this preloaded text, and it said, Stephen is a complete dickhead, and various other abusive things, and he was pissing himself laughing. But yeah, we had great fun with that. It's like the you could text someone's house phone in the UK.
Oh, yeah.
And you could get the voice to say some very rude things. Oh, it's brilliant. How old am I?
You're never too old to have fun with text to speech.
No, totally. Right, news. We've had some listener feedback. Actually, I'm not going to go into it. It was a bit of a people might remember we put out a request from Stephen Helmut for him and his wife to go to European rounds. Thanks very much indeed, Nick Codling.
Yep.
Sent us a great email, and Nick went into some considerable detail, absolutely in love with Aragon, which has kind of made me think, oh yeah, I'd quite like to go there.
Yeah, Aragon and the area around it is really nice. It's just that unfortunately it's quite remote, so if you do go there, it's not like you can, you know, if you go to Barcelona, you can sort of nip into Barcelona, the city itself, not the tracker, during the night, or you know, take a day from the GP to see the city. But if you're in Aragon, you're sort of in Aragon, and there's not really too much else in Aragon, unfortunately.
No, I mean, but we've passed Nick's thoughts on to Steve, and so and he's acknowledged. So thanks very much for that, Nick. But Sharon and I are thinking, thinking about retirement. Harry's probably just rolled his eyes. You know, well, it's as far as flying single pilot goes, it's only 10 years away for me. And we're thinking we might move to the south of France, not the posh Saint-Tropez end, but the Languedoc or across on the west coast, the Biarritz sort of area. So we might go and have a look maybe next year. And if we time it right, Aragon's only just over the Pyrenees. I've looked on a map. It's only an inch and a half away. I can walk that in a nanosecond. So, yeah.
Yeah, no, and it is a really nice track, it would be good, but as we say, you know, just unfortunately a bit remote, not like some of your bigger GPs.
No, exactly. A bit like Mugello, I think, iconic GP itself, but in an area that's not overrun with hotels and facilities.
Yeah, certainly.
I'd say that I've not been to Mugello yet. It's on the list.
Yes, it is very good. But moving on to news, some news that initially seemed quite big and serious, but then turned out to be basically nothing, was Jorge Lorenzo injured his left shoulder in a mini bike crash. Now, this mini bike crash was strange because he was training with Danny Pedrosa, which Jorge Lorenzo, Danny Pedrosa, they're a lot friendlier than they were, you know, 4 or 5 years ago. But
probably still quite competitive.
Yeah, they still don't really seem like they'd be training buddies. So I'm not quite sure what was going on there. But yeah, Spanish media got a hold of this quite late on, I think it was Monday night. And then it was revealed the next day that Lorenzo only had a grade one sprain. A grade one sprain is basically the lowest level of injury you can have. So it's a bit like, you know, walking on your ankle a bit funny as you're going to the shops, something like that.
Yeah.
But Lorenzo had travelled to Motegi with his arm in a sling just to be extra careful, which I guess, you know, if you're in Jorge Lorenzo's position, then any way you can rest the arm and remove even the tiniest bit of injury, I guess, is a big help. But, you know, considering that Lorenzo rode in China 2008 with double broken ankles, you wouldn't really think that a grade one sprain will be a problem if it's even still around.
No, exactly. I just very briefly wanted to mention, I was just looking at Motorcycle News today. Stephen English has put some good articles up. Now, this one didn't have a byline, so I don't know if it's Steve, but I just like the title, and it was referring to the Rossi versus Lorenzo title fight, and it was passion versus perfection, and I thought that sums it up very nicely. So we might steal that for the title of next week's show when we're looking back at Motegi. Unless, of course, you know, Rossi lacks passion and Lorenzo lacks perfection, in which case it will be what happened to the passion and perfection. Just after we recorded last week's show, congratulating ourselves on catching the news about Marquez's hand injury, we missed the news by a few hours that Tito Rabat, the worst kept secret in the paddock, was confirmed as Mark VDS's MotoGP rider for 2016. And more news about Tito coming up.
Yes, it was a pretty up and down week for Tito Rabat, shall we say. But before we get to that Rabat news, Nicky Hayden has been talking to Crash.net, and it seems like talks are ongoing for Hayden to move to the World Superbike paddock, although he didn't mention a specific team or manufacturer. But rumour suggests that he'll partner Michael Vandermark at Honda. Obviously, as we know, American Honda, or Honda America, however it's meant to be said, has played quite a big role in a lot of Hayden's career, obviously helping him move to MotoGP in the first place. It's a bit of a shame to see Hayden move to the Fireblade, which we all know isn't really competitive.
I mean, when are they going to update it, for God's sake?
It's one of those things. It seems like every year there's that rumor that, oh yeah, Honda will bring in a new Fireblade, don't worry. But yeah, as you say, I don't know.
I just think it's a shame.
Because you think that someone like Nicky Hayden, you know, if you put him on a bike like an Aprilia, would he beat Jonathan Rea in an outright season? Maybe not, but I think that Nicky would do quite well. You know, he is a world champion. He's been racing in MotoGP every year since, 2003?
Yeah.
Like, sure, he's had some pretty bad years with Ducati and now riding open bikes, but I don't think, you know, as we've seen with Valentino Rossi, you don't suddenly just lose all of your speed.
No, unless you're Marco Melandri.
Yeah.
And even Marco didn't when he went to World Superbikes. Now Andy Depugnier has, but that's not your favourite subject, is it?
No.
And Nicky apparently has said it's 50-50 whether he'll go to World Superbikes or not. He's such a loyal guy. I know he went to Ducati, but he was very loyal to Ducati when he was there.
Yeah, never had a bad word to say about them.
No, I suspect that Honda will want to keep him in their stable. I just wish they could give him a competitive bike. I'd hate to see him go there and do, basically, I'm sure he would do as well as Gintoli did this season. But it was sad to see Ginters having struggling and trying. I mean, he's just got his first podium, for goodness sake.
More of crazy.
Shortly. You had some great news for the Australian GP.
Yes.
I say great news. I don't know. I think it's good news.
Yeah. Some breaking news. Anthony West just revealed on his Instagram account that he will replace the injured Carol Abraham at the Australian GP. So Anthony West making a return to MotoGP. As we said a couple of shows ago, West got kicked out of the QMMF team. He rode in British Supersport this last weekend, but due to a variety of problems, his first lap on the MV Augusta was lap one of the race. So that didn't exactly go well for Westy. Hopefully he can, you know, do well at the Australian GP. He's obviously never ridden that open Honda, but hopefully he and Tony Elias can have a good battle. You know, I think for any rider coming in, being able to beat Tony Elias would be a solid achievement. No offense to Tony Elias, but you know.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
And in some more slightly interesting news, Guy Martin, about 12 hours ago from the recording of this show, was confirmed at racing the Macau GP. An MCN journalist had tweeted a photo of the MCN cover, which said Guy Martin will race at Macau. He then had to quickly delete that photo and re-upload it with that bit blocked out. About 8 hours ago, probably, all the news sites ran with the story that Guy Martin will race the Macau GP. But then about 2 hours ago, all of those news sites, including MCN, said that Guy Martin has withdrawn from the Macau GP. So that story lasted all of about 5 hours, which was a bit of a mess. It seems like maybe MCN there was slightly up to their old tricks of blowing the gun a bit too soon and maybe not gathering all the facts. But Guy Martin is still obviously recovering from his quite horrific crash. And with Macau, I think Macau's in November. That'd be a bit too soon for him.
Yeah. I was going to say, because he's pretty beaten up at the moment, isn't he?
He was pretty bad. Broken multiple bones, you know, almost everywhere.
I mean, I'm hoping and expecting that friend of the show, Mark Miller, and Jim's drinking buddy, will be at Macau again this year. Mark seems to be the real road racing version of Valentino Rossi. Just doesn't stop. He seems quite timeless. So fingers crossed we'll see Mark there. And there are fairly, it's getting better, the ability to find coverage of Macau.
Yeah, getting there.
Last couple of years have certainly seen improvement. Motegi preview. In Moto3, Danny Kent will secure the title if he wins and Bastianini comes 11th or lower. And in Moto3, anything's possible. Or if Danny comes second, Bastianini has to score nul point.
So
if Bastianini DNFs and Danny comes first or second, it's in the bag. If not, it will move on. Now, Johan Zarco can win the Moto2 title. All he's got to do is finish within 3 points of Tito Rabat, because that would leave a 75-point gap with 75 points left with the three remaining races. And Zarco has 6 race wins to Rabat's 1, so he can't be caught. And he may be assisted in his title quest by more breaking news, and no pun intended. Poor old Tito has broken the radius bone in his left arm whilst training at Almeria. Is it Almeria or Almeria?
I think it's Almeria, but
Almeria.
Not 1,000%
sure. I'm sure I asked Len, but I was having so much fun I completely forgot. If Tito doesn't race, or if he races and doesn't come at least 13th, Zarco could basically sit in his garage and just sip a glass of raspberry liqueur.
Even with a fully fit Rabat, I think that it was going to be very hard for Rabat to defend his title at Motegi. And now with Rabat breaking the radius, for those, I think the radius is one of the two long bones in the forearm.
Yeah.
Rabat's broken that. He had it operated on and plated, and Rabat is apparently very confident that he'll be able to ride with little to no problems. But I find that hard to...
A shitload of pain, but... it's the long bone thing, though, isn't it? It's a long bone. Pin it above and below, and it can... You can almost create or recreate the same function.
But...
Pain.
Yeah, and also the pain will be especially bad because Motegi is famous for the heavy braking that you have to do at multiple corners. And, you know, it's under braking when you're putting all that force through your wrists and through your arms that it will hurt. And then, you know, even if Tito does say, you know, put more pressure through his right arm than his left arm that's broken, then he would probably start to encounter problems with fatigue in his right arm.
Personally,
this seems like the final nail in the coffin of Tito's title defense, unfortunately. But we'll have to see what he can do. You know, I'm obviously no doctor, so maybe he'll win the race with a broken arm. But for me, I don't know. I don't see it.
Some stats came out from Aragon. Now, I always credit Dr. Martin Raines for this, but I don't know if some of this is you, Harry, but Marc Marquez made his 50th start in the MotoGP class at Aragon, from which he's had 23 race wins, which is phenomenal. That's nearly 50%, a total of 37 podium finishes. But if you compare that to the first 50 starts in the Premier class for Rossi, he took 25 wins and a total of 40 podium finishes, which kind of goes back to what Len and I were talking about last week with Marc Marquez, that he is, you know, without a shadow of a doubt, one of those very rare, very infrequent genius riders. But he's not actually, you know, if Ross is king of the planet, he's not king of the universe. He's not significantly doing better than Rossi did when he arrived. And of course, you know, to really match Rossi and possibly shuffle his way onto the podium of history, as Rossi described it once, he's going to have to show the longevity and go for the next 15 years.
Yeah, obviously with all of these stats, you know, people bring up the argument of, oh, well, Rossi's competition wasn't as hard and all this sort of stuff. So I don't know, but hang on.
Rossi's 10 race wins away from Giacomo Agostini's record.
That
really was a different era. Quite apart from the fact of the superiority of his machinery for nearly all his career, races. The fact that he used to race, you know, more than one class at each meeting, so he could double up, if you like.
Yeah.
Another stat was the Moto2 race at Aragon was the 100th since the class started in 2010, replacing the 250cc two-strokes. And if you listen very carefully in some backwoods in Northern California, you'll hear Jim sobbing quietly while sniffing an exhaust from an old two-stroke. Only Dominic Agata has started all 100 races. And isn't it sadly ironic that he actually crashed 2 laps into that race and got quite badly injured, and he won't be racing at Motegi.
Yeah, unfortunately, Dominic Agata will be replaced by Australian Josh Hook, who took second with Agata at the Suzuka 8-hour, and Hook has been racing in the Japanese Superbike Series and doing okay. So Josh Hook will be one to watch, certainly.
Yeah, good.
I don't think he'll do...
I saw the picture. He looks very young.
Yeah, he is. I think he's about 20, 21. And yes, very Australian, you know, typical sort of long blonde surfer hair. So
yeah.
one for the ladies, maybe.
Okie doke. Going to Motegi, it's one of only two tracks along with Phillip Island at which Marquez has not yet won a MotoGP race. Considering he's only been in the class 3 seasons, in not even 3 full seasons yet, that's pretty impressive. Rossi's also got 2 tracks at which he hasn't won, Cota and Aragon. Although, you know, Cota has only been around as long as Marquez, so that's slightly skewed. I was looking at motomatters.com, David Emmett's website, fascinating article talking about, there's been a lot of Twitter conversations from, dare I say, paranoid fans, cynical fans, realistic fans maybe, that the factories are going to be able to circumvent the restrictions the Speccy, or the level playing field that the Speccy ECU is meant to give. That there have been some problems found with the magnetic Morelli software, and they're basically, the teams are going to be allowed to retain their own inertial measurement unit. Now, if people understand inertial measurement units, it's these are the things that tell your iPad that you're tilting it to the right if you're playing a racing game or whatever it might be. Aircraft use them an awful lot for autopilots and the like. Accelerometers are a sort of simpler version, I guess. But the inertial measurement unit, someone made the point that they can, these will be, you know, retain. Honda will have their own one. Yamaha will have their own one. You know, Ducati can have their own one. Now, they can program those, and they'll still be able to tell which corner they're at. So, for example, if a corner has a camber, they'll know that even though, compared to the horizon, the motorcycle is leaning, say, at 60 degrees, it's actually only at 55 because of a 5-degree camber. So they can program it for that corner to tell the ECU, basically, bullshit. Or not bullshit, but they can adapt it. This is the concern, that they might be able to say, nah, it's only 55%, and the ECU will therefore allow more power. Because obviously it's a bit of a safety measure. And we won't go into the article in depth, but if you are of a technical mind, go to motormatters.com. It's one of the most recent articles written on the 4th of October, and it's titled "Will Cheats Prosper?" Or it's the question, "Will Cheats Prosper?" So, yeah, interesting. I think the important thing is the spec ECU will make the playing field more level than it is at the moment. It may not make it completely, but then, as David points out in the article, the factories can, you know, unless you limit the amount of personnel they're allowed, and there's no suggestion of doing that, they could have four people pouring over the data, each with a specialist technical bent, whereas Aspar will probably have, you know, one person whose duties also include making the tea.
Exactly.
Sorry to pick on Aspar, but, you know, the teams that have to really worry about budget are not going to be able to throw resources at it the way that the big factories will.
Yeah, for sure. You know, as we always say, you know, the factories will always be the factory teams, and the best riders will always be the best, surrounded by the best crews and all that sort of thing. So, yeah. It'll be interesting to see what does develop out of this whole spec ECU story and this new sort of a slant that it's taken, with some of the factories not being fully happy with what's happening.
No, exactly. In World Superbike news, Dorna announced at Manicure that from the last weekend, that from 2016, from next year, the French motor oil and lubricant company Motul will become the series title sponsor in what is described as a long-term deal. I'm sure I read somewhere it was 5 years initially, but I couldn't find that. Yeah, long-term anyway. But Motul will feature in all branding of World Superbikes next year. They will obviously be putting some money into the series, and it will also produce a range of World Superbike branded, a World Superbike branded product range. Is that clothing or
oil? I think it'll be like you can buy this special Motul race oil that all the World Superbike guys use, but not really, because, you know, just because Repsol are sponsored by Repsol, they've still put Elf or whatever in their bikes. But that's maybe just me being slightly cynical.
Yeah, probably realistic. But they'll be providing the teams with the oils and lubricants they need.
Yes.
Max Biaggi is here in Qatar. He's been testing for 4 days. I bumped into him a couple of times down at the supermarket. He was testing avocados for ripeness. None of that's true. He is in Qatar testing for 4 days before his World Superbike wildcard towards the end of this month. I haven't seen him in the Carrefour supermarket.
No, but you'd expect him to be pretty quick with the 4 days of testing. This is sort of what Biaggi's done at every race he's wildcarded at. You know, he had a lot of testing before Misano, a lot of testing before Sepang, and now he's had a lot of testing before Qatar. So expect Biaggi to once again be very fast in FP1 and then maybe fade off a little. But it certainly seems like Biaggi really, really wants to win. And, you know, if you can, fair enough, because, you know, at the end of the day, all of the guys he's riding against, they've had full seasons of racing and developing those bikes. So, I don't know if 4 days of testing is as huge an advantage as it seems. Sure, he'll have the perfect setup for that track, but at the end of the day, all the guys he's up against have, you know, a year of experience of setting up that bike. So,
yeah,
we'll have to wait and see on that one.
Absolutely.
Then, Onto some Moto3 news. As I mentioned last week, or maybe the week before, Bo Benschneider, the Dutch Red Bull rookie champion, will join the IO KTM Moto3 team next season, alongside Brad Binder, who will remain there for another year. The team will be down to just two riders, obviously Miguel Oliveira moving to the Leopard Racing team in Moto2. Speaking of Leopard Racing, there is a very hot rumour that they could be switching to KTM machinery next year as opposed to continuing to run the Honda machinery.
Well, we mentioned this because KTM are desperate to get Fabio Quartararo in their team. Yeah. And we kind of poo-pooed it. I think it was it you and me 2 weeks ago, me and Len last week? I can't remember. But, yeah, I was thinking they're not going to switch manufacturers just to for one rider, but maybe they are.
Maybe, yeah. And then in more silly season / rider movement news, Crash.net report that Josh Brooks is still seeking a ride in World Superbike for next season. Obviously, Milwaukee Yamaha were sort of thought to have been the ones who would be running the Yamaha effort in World Superbikes, obviously having done the bulk of development work this year on the new R1. But the Yamaha project will be run by the Crescent Squad. The Australian says that he wants to progress, and you know, regardless of if he wins the BSB title or not this year, it looks like he will though. Nothing firm is in place. It's not known what Milwaukee will be doing next year. There are rumours linking them to Aprilia in BSB, Aprilia in World Superbike, and also Suzuki in World Superbike. And if I were Josh Brooks, I would be trying to avoid that Suzuki like the plague, because Josh Brooks spent a solid 2 or 3 years in BSB, almost being the almost man on that Suzuki. So
he was basically doing in BSB what Alex Lowes has been doing in World Superbikes, wasn't he? He was overriding it and getting performances out of it that the bike really didn't deserve.
It was very clear with Brooks in BSB that he had the potential to win races and be on the podium, but unfortunately that Suzuki just wasn't consistent enough for him to do that.
Please, Josh, don't go and do the Suzuki. Mind you, if they, you know, because Alex is moving on, of course. Because he's going to the Yamaha. Yeah, that's right, isn't it?
Yeah,
he's going to the Yamaha squad. So if Randy DiPugno is retained, at least you know you'll be able to beat your teammate.
Yeah, certainly. I don't think Randy will be retained.
No, but they seem very happy with him as a test rider for the MotoGP bike, which, you know, is strange.
Yeah, but you know, you look at the other test riders that Honda and Yamaha have, and you know, the test riders generally aren't particularly fast. They're very safe riders who have a lot of knowledge. So
Very safe riders, not normally three words that you'd ever find in the same sentence as Randy DiPugno.
Yeah, that is true, actually. Although to be fair, Randy hasn't crashed quite as much this season. I think he's only had a single figure crashes this year, which is a big improvement for Randy.
Yeah, I remember one MotoGP year, I can't remember which team he was at. I think he'd had 32 crashes by the fifth race, you know, in all sessions, by something like the fifth race of the season. It's like, wow, that's got to be a record. Yes. And he was unbroken. He was still unbroken. But anyway, moving on. World Superbikes were racing at Manicourt. We'd already crowned Johnny Ray as the champion, so he turned up. Very relaxed. There were articles on the World Superbike website of what a champion has for breakfast. And I thought, okay, slow news week, obviously. But Leon Haslam popped out and got pole position. Johnny Ray was second, and Nicola Canepa, I didn't get to see qualifying, but I'm assuming he did a caravan Hector Barbera style toe.
Yes, it was also very, very wet in qualifying. Chaz Davies crashed, remounted, and still finished fourth in Super Pole. So the whole Magny-Cours weekend was sort of a on and off rain, but when the rain was on, it was torrential.
Yeah, and I mean, races were delayed because of the amount of standing water and stuff. Sylvain Guintoni qualified fifth at his home track. Lucas Skasser was sixth. Tom Sykes down in ninth.
I think he crashed.
Someone called Reiterberger, whose name normally you'll see at the bottom, were qualified 10th. So well done to Reiterberger M.
Yes. Reiterberger is one to watch. He's a very quick young German. I think he'll be joining World Superbikes full time next year. He just won the IDM championship, so keep an eye out.
Whatever did happen to Max Neukirchner? Because he was blisteringly. He had a horrendous injury at Monza, didn't he?
Yeah, Max Neukirchner is a weird one, as you say, very fast. Right now, he's racing in the IDM championship, but he had another quite bad crash, and I think he broke his hip. So Noy Kirshner's riding the new R1 in the IDM, and then he's also doing some endurance racing on that R1. And has had some success. I think he was racing for the Yacht team, and I think at the Oschersleben 8-hour, I think they were third, if memory serves.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm just pausing so you can all take off your hats and sweep them to the ground and bow to the phenomenal Norwich, that's a town in Norfolk, to the phenomenal knowledge of our Harry. That is remarkable. I'm going to start trying to think of people we used to watch racing and see if you know where they are. Wow, I'm impressed, Harry. That's brilliant.
Thanks.
Anyway, race one set off, and Tom Sykes was Johnny Ray led initially, then Tom Sykes quickly got in the lead and pulled out a Tom Sykes gap. I think he got up to about 3.5 seconds. There was a bit of a battle behind with Chaz Davis and Johnny. Then Johnny pulled away from Chaz, and then Michael van der Mark and Sylvain Guintoli got involved. And Chaz sort of got pushed back. Now, this was a wet race, but it was starting to dry. They all went out on wet tyres, and they all stayed on them, except for Leon. Leon Haslam, for some reason, he had a terrible start. I mean, you watch. This is the race I actually saw.
I haven't seen this race.
It almost looked like he was trying to pull away in second gear. He was that much slower than everyone else. But Leon decided to come in for intermediates, and it didn't work. He ended up being lapped by the leaders and finished 16th.
Ugh.
But as we've seen so often, Johnny started to close with Tom Sykes, and the World Superbike commentary team of Jack and James, or were they doing BSB? I can't remember.
I think if it was Eurosport, it was probably Tom Gaymore and Steve Parrish.
It was. But they were saying, the team will want first and second. Tom is chasing down Chaz Davis. He's several points behind. You know, it's a great chance for him to close that gap. Team orders maybe, Johnny. No. Johnny Ray caught him and went past him and ended up winning by 4.7 seconds. He was in the lead for the last three laps. But I don't think there was any histrionics. It certainly wasn't, Tom didn't do a Loris Baz on him as he did last year.
No, I think Kawasaki learnt last year in Qatar that just don't even mention team orders around Tom Sykes. Best to just let them both go race, and then whatever happens, happens.
Yeah, it was a... It wasn't a brutal move. It was a sportingly aggressive move, but the conditions weren't great. And Johnny Ray, he's not going to slow down. And I've heard this so many times from races. They say the problem is if you're significantly fast, and he was like half a second a lap faster than Tom. In fact, looking at that winning gap, by then he was over a second a lap faster. He'd have to back off considerably. I know it sounds ridiculous, that doesn't it? A second over an entire lap, but. To these guys, that's backing off considerably. And people say you're more likely to crash then, because when you get into a rhythm, you just keep plugging away. So that's what he did. He went past and he won. Tom was second. Chaz was sixth, which did push him back down. Sylvain Guintoli got his first podium of the year. That's so sad to see that it's his first podium, but very glad to see him on the podium. Michael van der Mark just pipped in fourth. I say just 8 seconds. Behind his teammate, Leon Camier finished another race.
And an incredible finish.
Yeah. Fifth place, really up there battling. Great lad, beautiful bike. It's just a dog when it comes to reliability. Jordi Torres ended up down in 12th. So I know what happened to Jordi. But I'd shifted him out of my World Superbike team, so I don't care. And Randy Depuña didn't finish.
Surprising.
Race two was dry. Leon led initially, then Chaz led for quite a while with Johnny Vane close attendance. He then went past, and it looks from the lap chart, which as Len and I worked out last week, are very deceiving. Looks like it was a bit of a procession with Johnny leading Chaz, leading Tom. So Chaz was able to claw back some of the points he'd lost to Tom in the first race. And where that leaves us, I mean, Johnny Ray's way out in front. Chaz Davis is now 16 points ahead of Tom Sykes, and we've got the two races at Qatar left. So Tom needs really more than one place, needs to finish one more than one place ahead of Chaz, even if he wins. So he'll be hoping for some divine intervention, possibly in the form of Max Biaggi.
Yeah, exactly. With Biaggi there in Qatar, that that battle between Chaz and Sykes could actually get quite interesting, because I don't think Biaggi will be able to win a race, but he's certainly capable of getting to the podium.
And Johnny Ray has now won, I think it's 13 races, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14 races. I think he's got the record now. I think 30 previous, wasn't it?
Yeah, he also joined the 500 club in World Superbikes, which is very prestigious, scoring 500 points in the season. It's almost like he was in the BSB showdown.
Yes, yeah. Wait till we go on to that. And what's fascinating to see, Davide Giuliano missed the first four rounds of the season, competed in the next four and a half, then has missed everything since, and he's still in 11th place.
Yeah.
Really looking forward to him coming back, and just hope that Giuliano has more luck next year and doesn't get as busted up. But yeah. Then we went to World Supersport, and PJ Jacobson.
Just before we talk about the World Supersport qualifying, Gino Rea had an absolutely massive crash. I think it was coming down into the Melbourne hairpin. I think that's what it was, or is it Adelaide? I can't remember. It's some Australian city. But an absolutely massive crash where it looked like the front brakes on his bike just locked up. He was coming in. It's obviously quite a very tight hairpin.
So he I've heard about it. Yeah.
Yeah. So he slammed on the brakes and he literally flipped over the bars. As I said, the front of the bike, it looked like it had locked. Gino was slammed onto the ground and narrowly avoided the wall and his bike coming down on top of him. Gino was incredibly lucky to get away with, you know, very minor injuries. I think he suffered a broken finger and quite a bruised face. But yeah. Gino really lucky to get away from that one. But the cause of that crash still seems unclear. But from watching it, I think you can see it on Gino Rea's Facebook. It looked like it was maybe a problem with the front brakes, but nothing confirmed.
Well, somebody tweeted, another racer, I think, or was it James Whittam? No, I think
it was Shaky Byrne who tweeted about it, because then Simon Buckmaster, the boss of Team PTR that Gino races for, Simon Buckmaster had one or two maybe slightly pointed comments for Shaky Byrne about his BSB title defense not going to plan.
Oh, that's pretty pathetic, isn't it? Because, yeah, the impression I got was Shaky was saying, so your team is saying it was rider error, really, you know, or something like that. It wasn't the bike, no, there was no technical fault, really. Simon Palmaster is a strange character.
He's definitely a character, though, you know? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. The pantomime villain type, I think. So we got to World Supersport, and we had PJ Jacobson on pole position from Keenan Sofuoglu, who was pretty certain to tie up the title this weekend, which he subsequently managed to do. Is that his fourth or fifth?
It's his fourth title.
His fourth title.
Yeah.
And the lad is built for this series. He is just so good at that level. You know, props to him. It's been a horrible year for Keenan in many personal ways, but racing wise, you know, you can't knock him. But neither can you PJ Jacobson. Great tragedy about Jules Cluzel. I've done it again. Who was it who picked me up for?
Oh, I can't remember.
Mick Lumley, I think it was. Yeah, for hyperbole. It's not a tragedy.
It's
a great disappointment for Jules Cluzel.
Certainly. Fair shout to Sofuoglu, because Sofuoglu did say in his post-race press release that, you know, Sofuoglu was a bit disappointed that Cluzel wasn't there, because if Cluzel had been there, Sofuoglu was sure that the title battle would have gone down to the wire. So,
yeah,
you know, nice of Sofuoglu to...
He's that classic. He's a really nice guy off the bike.
Yeah.
As soon as you put it on, he wants to kill everyone, you know. But PJ changed teams through the season. You know, he's done an absolutely brilliant job.
Yeah, since joining Core Motorsport, PJ Jacobson has not finished off the podium.
Wow. And that's really impressive. He's now 30 points ahead of Jules Cluzel. So, you know, he's got second place wrapped up. He won the race. Keenan was second. Mahias was third. Zanetti fourth. Carl Smith was fifth. Wah was sixth. Gino Rea, after that crash, still came in seventh. So hats off to him. And Robbie Rolfo, who is clearly immortal, and has discovered the, you know, fountain of eternal youth, came in 11th. Nico Tyrrell down in 14th. Slightly disappointing. I don't know if he ran off and came back on. I didn't see this race. I'm sorry. But yeah, World Supersport, Keenan Sofuoglu, world champion, fourth time.
Yes.
And well, then that was going on. Silverstone, strangely dry, had Josh Brooks on pole and John Hopkins finally getting that Ducati to behave for at least qualifying, was second. Christian Eden, a great third. Shaky Byrne qualified 10th.
Yeah, another difficult weekend from Shaky. He also had some problems in the race. But Josh Brooks putting in a 203.984, which I think is the outright superbike record, faster than all of the world superbikes. And I think that lap would have put him 24th on the MotoGP grid for the Silverstone round this year. So he would have been ahead of Marco Melandri and one of the forward bikes, which maybe doesn't seem like a huge achievement, but at the end of the day, that
R1... He's on a road bike.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's a super souped up road bike, but it is a road bike.
Yeah, in theory, put some wing mirrors on that and maybe change the exhaust to pass some noise restrictions, and you could ride Josh Brooks's bike to the shops.
He also had, teaming up with him, Jakob Smerts, who's come in to cover for the injured
just kicked out Brock Parks.
Oh, of course, yeah, Brock Parks. And we also have Robin Harms coming back, who was a unguided missile for some years in World Superbikes and then in World Supersport and then in BSB. Had a really bad injury. Good to see him back. Real character. Unfortunately, couldn't qualify higher than 21st on a Kawasaki with PR Racing, but, you know, good to see him at least there anyway.
Yeah,
Danny Buchan on the PBM Kawasaki teaming up with Shane Byrne, because that is covering Stuart Easton, who's basically sitting out, I think, the rest of the season now to recover from his injuries. He qualified 12th. And the race is... really sorry I haven't seen.
Luckily, I was able to watch the races, as I said at the top of the show. James Rispoli's Facebook page. Go there and you too can watch the races. But race one was actually quite a nice little race. There was quite a big group at the front for much of the race. There was the likes of James Ellison, Josh Brooks, Shaky Byrne, John Hopkins, and then Peter Hickman closed up towards the end of the race. So a nice little battle between them. Unfortunately, Ryuichi Kiyonari, he pulled in. Continuing Richard Canary's terrible season. But if we follow the Kiyonari pattern of racing, next year he'll probably win the championship. So, you know, get him in your fancy teams early. But towards the end of the race, Josh Brooks had been in the group. But then with, I think it was about 3 or 4 laps to go, Brooks just put the hammer down and was able to break away and win by just over half a second. But it looks like Brooks and that R1, at peak, they're pretty much working perfectly together.
I know, and I understand, you know, Sylvain Guintoli and Alex Lowes are a very, very strong team for Crescent Yamaha, and they're both in the World Superbike paddock. You know, Sylvain was a thoroughly deserving world champion last year. I understand the pedigree, but bleeding hell, Josh Brooks has got on with that bike so well. I'm just gutted that he's not going to get a chance to try it on the world stage.
Yeah, it is a bit unfortunate, as you say. I think both Brooks and the Milwaukee team are a bit upset and feel a bit shunned by Yamaha. But it was a good end to the race. James Ellison made quite a big mistake, and both him and Hopper went wide, which allowed Peter Hickman to steal third. On the cool down lap, Peter Hickman's bike began to catch fire. And
I heard about this.
Yeah, John Hopkins rode next to him and tried to point to the bike. But Hickey just thought that Hopper wanted a handshake, so it then took Hickman a couple more meters to realize that, oh, God, I'm on fire. Luckily, Hickman was able to get off the bike, and the marshals came over and extinguished the BMW.
Didn't he sort of stand there holding its hand, though? He just stood there holding the bike up.
Yes, and,
now,
and
actually, that's quite a smart move to think. If he puts it down, there's more chance that fuel's going to get out and make the fire work. I don't know, but it was a very brave thing to do, or possibly dumb. I'm not sure.
Yes, Colin Edwards had joined the BSB commentary team this weekend, and obviously yeah. Colin Edwards is quite famous for the Aprilia Cube incident in Saxon Ring.
Yeah.
And Edwards was saying, I would have dropped that thing and run a long, long time ago. So you should probably at least watch BSB Race 1 just for Colin Edwards' commentary. He is quite a good colour commentator.
And, someone tweeted, and Colin retweeted it, slightly self-promoting, but it said, can we please clone Colin Edwards and have him commentate on every bike racing series on the planet, please?
He's yeah.
fantastic.
Especially Edwards and James Witham. They're two very different characters that get an interesting mix when put together.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, race one was really good. You know, it's Josh Brooks's season to lose. You know, with the showdown, without the showdown, Josh Brooks has been the best rider this season. And mm-hmm. as we'll get to in a second, regardless of whatever crazy point system they come up with, I think that Josh Brooks would have won this championship and probably will win it next time out. Race two was quite similar. Again, another quite big group. Josh Brooks took a dominant 3.5-second victory this time. Ellison had been leading until the middle of the race, at which point James Ellison encountered some sort of tyre problem where it seems like he just lost all grip. So Ellison went from fighting for victory to finishing the race in 17th spot, which was pretty bad. And then apparently Shaky Byrne also had an issue with his tyre, where the tyre spun on the rim, which is obviously less than ideal.
Now, Hopper didn't finish this time. Was that a bike failure?
Yes, that was a technical issue.
Mm.
So race one, he was at least able to finish in fourth, and you know, obviously getting second. So the Ducati...
He's still got the pace, hasn't he? He has got the bike at the moment.
Yeah, so and the Ducati is getting better. You know, in previous rounds, it was good for maybe one or two laps in qualifying. This time, it was able to do qualifying and make a race. So hopefully at the season...
I don't understand it, because in World Superbikes, the Ducati's not notoriously unreliable.
No, not anymore. No, certainly. Now the Ducati in World Superbike, you know, it rarely misses a beat. Most of the bikes in World Superbike are pretty reliable, and there's not one that's really known for braking other than the MV.
Yeah.
But yeah, just something about that bike. So unfortunate for Hopper, but it looks like Hopper will probably stay with that team next year. So hopefully they can solve those reliability issues, because Hopper still does have the speed somewhere inside of him.
Yeah, absolutely. The table, if this was any normal championship, Josh Brooks would have a 92-point lead, and there's only 75 points left available. I don't know why I've written 74 there. There's only 75. There's three race final weekend in 2 weeks' time at Brands Hatch on the GP circuit, thankfully, not that ridiculous little Indy circuit, which is pants. It's like a mini-moto track. But he should be champion already. As it is, he holds a 47-point lead, so it's very much his to lose, but it's still ridiculous.
Yes.
I'm just making clear, that's my opinion, in case Stuart Higgs wants to take out some Mafia-style contract on me.
Dave and I had a bit of a conversation with, I can't remember who it was, on Twitter, where maybe a different idea for the showdown should be that you only get points for a race win, for pole position, and for a fastest race lap. Because then, if you wanted crazy racing, giving points only for wins and fastest laps would be absolutely pushing 110% racing. You know, there'd be a lot of crashes, which no one really wants, but unfortunately fans love crashes. So, maybe we'll see that as the next evolution of the showdown.
Yeah. And the Motorcycle News Fantasy League.
Yes, the most important part of the show.
Now, we've got an interesting situation here. We have a tie for the lead, incredibly. Roberto Bobbio, who's been there or thereabouts all season. John Crawford, who's been in the top five, I think, all season, and popping in and out of the top three, are both tied on 1,768 points, which puts them 114th, joint 114th in the overall league. The differences between their teams, Roberto has Lorenzo in his MotoGP team, John Crawford has Smith. I think they both have Ian Oni as their second rider. So Lorenzo versus Smith, you're going to tip Lorenzo.
Yeah,
however,
for sure.
Roberto has Yordi Torres, and John Crawford has Chaz Davies in World Superbikes.
Edge Davies.
So that kind of, that's going to be really interesting. Roger England has a significantly different team that I didn't actually bother to write down. Roger is third with his Rovers 1883 team on 1746. So he's 22 points behind. I think he's got a different rider in each round, but I don't think, barring disasters for some top riders, I don't think Roger's going to be able to challenge. Meanwhile, the hosts mini league, Scott and myself have exactly the same World Superbike and BSB teams. So we're tied on 1684. We moved up together. We're both on 17th. We've pulled a little bit of a gap on you, Harry. You're on 48 points behind us on 1636 in 32nd place. Now, I'm trying to remember, Scott and I've got Lorenzo and Rossi, and I think he's got Lorenzo. I've got a horrible feeling he's got Pedrosa. You run through the other host, so I'm just going to have a quick look.
Okay, so then behind me is Jules Cheesek with Desmo Burnouts 2015, 1,450 points, so probably out of the podium battle. Dave Neal with Strawbales Mediocre, 135th overall, 1,288. Then in 191st is the birthday boy Jim Race. Happy birthday, Jim, with Racing.
Happy birthday, Jim.
1,094. Then rapidly gaining on Jim, actually. In 207th is Len Padilla with Moto Len with 1,010 points.
He's got into the four figures. That's all Len wants.
Four figures and 84 points behind Jim. So, it could be a bit close but between those two for the wooden spoon contest.
And I love Len's comment. Sorry to interrupt you. I love Len's comment last week when he said, yeah, I do have an excuse, but it's in my excuse book and I don't have that with me right now. That's brilliant. Scott has got Lorenzo and Pedrosa. I've got Lorenzo and Rossi. So for me and Scott, who's going to come top of the host mini league? It's and we need to get Scott on. We haven't actually heard Scott other than doing his interviews. We need to get him on as a co-host before the end of the season, I think. It's Pedrosa versus Rossi. I'm slightly worried about Pategi because Pedrosa goes well, and I think that kid's got his mojo. I think he's actually gone out and bought himself a mojo for his birthday or whatever.
Yeah, that could be. Could be tight.
Yeah, that's gonna be interesting. Racing coming up this weekend, Motegi, awful time to try and watch. I'm not going to be able to see any of it live, so we're all going to be coming back, going to the MotoGP.com no spoilers page, avoiding all social media because I'll be at work while the races are going on. It's going to be awful and horrible.
I unfortunately have to adjust my sleep cycle to be on Asian time to follow the next 3 weeks of GP racing live. So it's going to be a wild time for me.
Is Barcelona a 24-hour city?
Surprisingly not really. The only food shop near our office is a McDonald's, and that shuts at 11 p.m. So
really?
Yes. Wow. So I'm going to have to bring in some sandwiches from home, I think, because, it's going to get pretty wild. I both hate and love the flyaways. There's something cool about, staying up all night to watch motorcycles in Japan.
Yeah.
But then you feel pretty awful when you're leaving the office at 2 p.m. and it's very bright out and you feel very dirty having, been up all night and, yeah.
Yes, yeah. The weekend after is better. I've actually got a couple of days off on the Sunday and Monday because of the World Superbikes at LaSalle. So Sharon's will obviously be coming with me to the races, but unfortunately she's probably going to find that she's a sport widow for that weekend because I'll be able to watch Franz Hatch, qualifying and races. And the flyaway at PI on the Sunday morning, having got in from the Saturday night from watching QP up at the circuit here, and then on Sunday night. Yeah, so I'm going to be having a weird sleep cycles as well. I need Monday to recover. Most of America, of course, is finished. That wraps up the BSB and the World Superbike seasons in 2 weeks' time. Sorry, not 2 weeks, 10 days' time.
Yeah.
And then all we got left is PI and Valencia.
And Sepang.
Sorry. Sepang. PI, after that weekend, we have Sepang and Valencia.
Yep, it's all getting very real at this point. Remember that if you fans out there have any sort of long conversation topics, be sure to send those to motopod@motopodcast.com, as we are always looking for ideas to talk about during the off season.
And they can be really wacky. They can be which would be the best circuit if they all ran the other way round, or you know, I'd love to see people going up the corkscrew at Laguna. That'd be hilarious.
Yeah, or you know, as we were talking about earlier, what should the BSB showdown rules be? You know, if we could change the showdown rules, what would they be? Obviously,
imagine Moto 3 on the first lap going up the corkscrew at Laguna Seca?
That would be very scary for all involved. Actually,
I mean, and they never go the small. They never went the small classes. But could you imagine Moto 3 on lap one going down? The corkscrew at Laguna Seca.
It's probably good that Moto 3 never went to Laguna Seca, to be honest, because the whole corkscrew seems like a recipe for disaster with them.
Yes. Yeah. I just like the fantasy of, I'd love to see a one-off MotoGP race at Cadwell Park. see Danny Pedrosa launch himself off the mountain.
Land in London.
In the next county, yeah. And on Dave's house. Wow, yeah, that would be extraordinary.
Any wacky ideas like that, motopod@motopodcast.com. It looks like hitting the apex is going to be shown in the US/Canada very soon, so if you have any more emails on that, I think we've pretty much run the course on opinions on hitting the apex, but if you think you have something unique to add to the conversation, then fire away an email as well.
Yeah, and any thoughts on the idea we had about next year's mini league, whether we run a mini league or the Motopod League and a reverse league where you have to spend all 10 million, but you've got to try and do as badly as possible. Yeah, and the more I think about it, the more I'm a bit uncomfortable with that, because I'd be like, oh, come on, can't you buy? I mean, everyone's just going to, if John Hopkins stays with Ducati, they'll just, everyone get Leon Camier. If he stays with MV, bless him. Not because he falls off, just because the damn thing breaks down all the time, but at least he's generally safe.
Yeah, I'm a bit in two minds about it as well. I think it could be very funny, but you're also kind of bit grim, sort of hoping for people to not finish and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah. I mean, Jules being the incredibly empathetic and compassionate human being he is, used to, I think it was Jules who... Or certainly one of the people who used to do the ride on two tipping competition always said all the riders will finish. All the riders will finish, knowing that they wouldn't, but he just couldn't bring himself to pick someone out and gain, you know, completely meaningless success, but you know, gain points in the competition from someone's misfortune. So
which is understandable. You know, all of these guys and girls who do go out there and race are putting their lives on the line. So
yeah. And I just want to reiterate, I think it was Mick Lumley who picked me up. I would like to publicly apologise for the hyperbole of describing Jules Cluzel being injured and not being able to finish the season as a tragedy. It's not, of course. It's a disappointment. Fairly acute one, I should imagine. But no. Anyway. Can we spin this out to an hour? We've got about another minute and a half. I could sing something. No, that would be the...
We can listen to me check speedweek.com to see if there's any more news breaking. It doesn't look like there's any more news breaking at the second, apart from that they have the photo that Tito Rabat posted of him standing next to his two doctors. But curiously, or not curiously, I guess, Tito Rabat is doing his very best job to hide his left arm. And as we said at the top of the show, Tito's people are saying that the injury isn't that bad, but I can't really see how a broken left arm isn't bad, but you know.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm just looking at MotoGP.com and it's all basically, they're just talking about all the title races. Bastianini saying it's very difficult to predict. Rossi, I'll have to give my all. In fact, Bastianini said it's not easy to interpret. Is he talking about Japanese or the...
I don't know.
They've also got a photo montage. they've got a photo montage of the arrogant paddock girls.
I wrote the Bastianini preview, and I may have somewhat deliberately picked that quote to be the title for that article because it did seem a bit odd. With writing some of these rider previews, some riders put out very boring press statements. Sometimes you do just have to do things like, you know, put as Danny Pedrosa's title, I stayed in Barcelona for my birthday. But I think we've now managed to scrape the bottom of the barrel and stretch this show to an hour. So I hope everyone out there in Motorpod land enjoyed Martin and I checking the news sites for the last minute and a bit.
Yeah. Interestingly, the Wayne Gardner, Chris Vermeulen and Troy Bayliss have all been quoted giving their views. And Wayne Gardner said, in 40-odd years of being involved or following MotoGP, he's never seen it so close.
Interesting. I'm not sure if that's true because the title battle between Marquez and Lorenzo also went down to Valencia. But, you know, Wayne Gardner probably knows better than I do, so...
He makes a good point. He said if it was two different manufacturers, different bikes, you could read it a bit easier. But he said the fact that, you know, it's those two who are such different riders, but on exactly the same machinery. It's going to be fascinating. I just hope next week we're still saying it's going to be fascinating. Or
hopefully.
Fascinating, which would be a better pronunciation.
Hopefully.
Super stuff. Harry, thank you very much indeed. Thank you, listeners.
And, thank you, listeners, for bearing with us, especially in those last few moments. But there's an hour of Motopod, and we'll be back with you next week for hopefully a slightly longer show. Hopefully both Martin and I will have been able to watch all the racing, and hopefully we'll be able to maybe rotate the hosts a bit more. Unfortunately, all the other hosts are a bit busy with real life and all that sort of jazz. But I'm looking forward to Motegi. Motegi always produces some pretty thrilling racing. You know, obviously 2010 Jorge Lorenzo versus Valentino Rossi. Hopefully we see that pretty much exactly the same again, but instead of battling for third, they're battling for first.
Inshallah.
Exactly. So it's a bye from me.
And a bye from me.